We are joined right now by a writer at large, also an EP, executive producer of Killer Inside, The Mind of Aaron Hernandez. It's a Netflix original documentary series. It's an amazing watch. His latest piece for Sports Illustrated is called One Striking Moment. We are joined by Kevin Armstrong. Kevin, it's really nice to have you on. How are you?
Hey, pleasure having me on. I appreciate it, Jim.
Kevin, thank you so much. Listen, the piece which is up right now on the SI website is incredibly haunting. When did you first start to work on this story?
Yeah, literally days after the event happened. I spent 9 years in Long Island City. I lived there for a good while out of college. And, when I heard about this event and had spoken with an editor at Sports Illustrated, they kind of gave me the green light to pursue the story full on. And chilling and haunting are, really the right words here. It's really the intersection of two lives, and you really, neither of whom saw that night coming or the ripple effects that would come after it.
Kevin Armstrong, my guest. So let's set this up, and why don't we talk for a moment about these two lives. Let me start with Jamil Jones. For those who do not know, who is he and what was his life like in August of 2018?
Yeah, he was an assistant coach for Wake Forest. Danny Manning was his boss. I saw him literally days before this event even occurred. He was down at the Peach Jam, one of those AAU events, really well attended with the college coaches for recruiting in the summer in July. And, he was just another guy wearing the company logo, the college logo back then. And, within days, his life changed in the first week of August there. But he was just, rank and file assistant who was not a star in college. He played low level college basketball and, kind of worked his way up the ranks of the AAU system. And, then Danny Manning had him on his bench, and he was selling recruits right up to the day that the punch was thrown.
Kevin Armstrong is my guest. His latest piece for SI is called One Striking Moment. Then on the other side, you have Sandra Szabo. Who is he, and what was his life like leading up to August 2018?
Yeah, he was well-traveled, born in Hawaii, spent some time in Connecticut, Montana, had family ties all over the country, North Carolina, and he was living in Florida, but he was up in New York, for business. He was in the marketing world, and then he also happened to be at a stepsister's wedding at a just a regular wedding venue called the Foundry in Queens. And, revelry and a lot of drinking that night. He wound up literally on the street corner across from where Jones was staying at a Courtyard Marriott right in the Long Island City section of Queens. And this is when the night really, everything turned, was shortly after midnight on August 5th.
All right, so Kevin, it was reported that Szabo had a blood alcohol content of 0.39, which is five times the legal limit. Based on your reporting, what was his plan as he left his stepsister's wedding?
Yeah, there was an after party scheduled at a local hotel. He had a ride over there. He was not driving that night. He gets to that location and the after party was essentially postponed. There was some kind of weather event. And so he gets in an Uber or a Lyft, ride hail system, and he gets taken to a corner that's about 10 blocks away from where he was staying. He was staying at a Howard Johnson, but he winds up across the street from this essentially Courtyard Marriott. He takes a short walk over there, and around 1:40, 1:30 a.m., Jones is turning onto that street. And, Jones had a very simple night. Szabo was, drinking and celebrating at the wedding. Jones and his fiance, Dejanine Paul, had been at Hamilton, of all things, one of the most sought-after Broadway tickets in the world at that time. And all of a sudden, Szabo and Jones are on the same street. And that's really when the story, turns at this point.
Kevin Armstrong, my guest, one thing about with Jones. Jones, had he had anything to drink that night?
He had not. He testified eventually in court that he's essentially a teetotaler. No no drink in his life and, you know, not part of his world and everything. And he had a ginger ale at a Times Square lounge was what he testified in court.
So what happened when these two finally did encounter one another? What happened then?
Yeah, so Sabo was on the block first. Over the course of about an hour, he had a few interactions with two other men on that street. And one, he was essentially banging on neighborhood cars on their windows. And one man called 911, you know, kind of felt put off or threatened by Sabo at that point. And, you know, he made it known. He told neighbors. You know, he eventually got back in his apartment. Second man, Sabo went up to, and this man tried to help him, tried to essentially, you know, recognize that he was somebody who wasn't from the neighborhood and appeared to be lost. And the Good Samaritan, we'll call him, he tried to stop Sabo from, you know, going towards another car, potentially banging on it or whatnot. And Sabo actually took a swing at him and knocked his eyeglasses off. It was a punch. It went to his face. And so, you know, at that point, the Samaritan kind of, you know, walks away and says, hey, you know, he can find his own way. But a few minutes later, say about 20 minutes later, Jones turns onto the street. And when he gets there, Sabo's kind of struggling with a metal mailbox, you know, one that's firmly in the ground. And he gets there. He's doing that as Jones is driving a BMW X3, his fiance's SUV. She's in the passenger side seat. There's, at this point, they're literally just on the same intersection. And Jones drives right past Sabo. Sabo seems to have, his attention seems to have been attracted by something, whether it was the sight of Jones's car. Jones says that his window was up. He says that he didn't say anything to Sabo, but for whatever reason, Sabo then gravitated towards Jones's car. And Jones puts his car, this is all on surveillance video that's taken from a bakery, essentially, and it's all captured there until this point. So Sabo is approaching the car. Jones says that he saw a parking spot, and he put his car in reverse, and he reverses it now driving down the wrong way on a one-way street is what his intent here is, to find that parking spot. But Sabo approaches the car, and at this point, the brake lights on Jones's SUV blind the cameras. And Jones asserted in court that in that interim, Sabo punched his rear windshield, and the glass shattered, and the fiance is crying and puts her face down into her lap, and Jones darts out of the car. I mean, it is instantaneous that he leaves the car, and he pursues Sabo, who's now in retreat. Now, after the blinding of the camera, you can now see everything again in the surveillance. And it's a dead sprint that Jones makes towards Sabo. Sabo's in retreat, positions himself behind that same mailbox that he was trying to remove earlier. And at this point, Jones unleashes a single punch right to the jaw of Sabo. And Sabo falls backwards, hits his head. 2 days later, he dies. And Jones just left him there that night. Jones looked down, saw that Sabo was down, took two steps or so, looked back over his shoulder, still saw Sabo was down. And he just got in his SUV and left. And, you know, he actually returned to the hotel. He didn't stay at the hotel that night, but he returns then the next day. And he looks down from his window, he said, in the hotel room. And he sees yellow police tape and an NYPD SUV at the scene where he had left Sabo. And Jones still got on the flight. He didn't say he went and spoke to anybody. He just got on his flight and went back to North Carolina for work, which was essentially a Chris Paul, the former Wake Forest point guard, was having a charity golf event that Tuesday, so 2 days later. And that's where Jones was when Sabo was taken off of life support on August 7th.
Kevin Armstrong is my guest, and it's quite a story. The latest piece for SI is up right now. It's called One Striking Moment. So, Kevin, when he ends up at that Chris Paul charity golf event, and he had seen these things before he got back on the airplane, do you think that he believed it was anything serious? I mean, exactly what was going through his mind when he left, when he saw authorities there, but he left and he went back on that plane and he went back to work. What was he thinking at that point?
Yeah, he insists that, you know, he didn't feel that, you know, what happened could have happened, essentially. You know, he threw the punch. He says that he was acting in self-defense. He insists that he wasn't, responsible for anything after that. He believed that, you know, he got on that flight and he was fine, you know. But there's multiple points, as the prosecution pointed out, at his trial, they said, you know, there were points where he could have stopped. You know, he could have put himself between the car or his fiance and Sabo and then, you know, just halted there, gotten back in the SUV and, you know, driven away. But he pursued him and, he fully, you know, threw the punch, you know, a pretty forceful punch, planted his foot. He had a lot of momentum. Just the physics of it, you can see how, you know, Sabo's, you know, absorbs that punch and, you know, the events, catastrophic brain injury that resulted. And that was the ripple effects of just the single punch that was thrown.
So, Kevin, what about the charge? Sabo's mother, Donna Kent, wanted Jones to be charged with homicide or, at the very least, criminally negligent homicide. How did the DA's office charge Jones and why?
They charged with third degree assault, a misdemeanor. They essentially did not feel that they could have convicted him for homicide, criminally negligent homicide in New York. They believe that intent is necessary to gain those convictions in front of a jury. And Sabo's mother, you know, really launched a 18-month campaign from that day to the beginning of the trial that she wanted Jones. She believed Jones murdered her son, and that was her full-throated opposition. She voiced it to the DA. She went public, and she really, you know, was uncompromising in her belief. And there were a lot of people who saw things both ways. You know, they saw a lot of gray area. You know, there's different states, different ways of interpreting the assault laws and everything. But when Jones was convicted, it was for third degree assault just last month in early February.
I was going to say, so what was the verdict? Why don't you finish that thought? What was that verdict? And then what does that mean for Jones?
Yeah, 6-person jury found him guilty of third degree assault. It's a misdemeanor. And the maximum punishment is 1 year in prison. He can get as little as probation, or he can get the full year or something in between. But it was scheduled for March 18th. Naturally, with the coronavirus, everything's changed in terms of scheduling. June 16th is now his sentencing date. And, you know, there are letters still being sent to the judge and the DA's office, you know, for the full, you know, 1 year to be pressed for, whereas the possibility is still that he does not serve any prison time.
So let me finally ask you this. There is a certain randomness to this that is so haunting and, as you point out, so chilling. There are two people who were born 3 days apart but had never met one another. Their paths cross. They interact for a total of 39 seconds. And in that time, everything changed and one man is dead. As somebody who covered the story, what do you take away from it?
It's the ultimate reminder that there's a thin membrane between life and death, and the randomness is unreal in this case. You know, these guys, you know, if Jones continues driving on, or if Sabo doesn't approach the back of the car, you know, there's a million what ifs to be considered. But at the end of the day, you know, it's a reminder of the repercussions and consequences of, you know, unleashing a physical response on somebody or just walking away. you know, that's the real takeaway that I take.
He is a writer at large. He is also the executive producer of Killer Inside, The Mind of Aaron Hernandez. That's a Netflix original documentary series. His latest piece for Sports Illustrated is called One Striking Moment. And again, an extremely haunting piece. Kevin, I really appreciate that. The piece is a great work of journalism. Very, very sad story. But great to have you on the show, and I do appreciate your thoughts very much.
Thanks so much for having me, Jim.
Thank you, Kevin. Kevin Armstrong joining us. And although he did a really good job of laying that all out, you should still read that piece.